1967, o mundo começou, pelo menos pra mim. E a minha história reduzida é mais ou menos assim, ó. Chora, chora. Nasci em São Cristóvão, morador de Madureira, desde pequeno acostumado a subir ladeira. Me lembro muito bem do meu tempo de moleque, que sempre passava as férias no final do 77. Padre Miguel, sempre 10 da bateria. Saudoso mestre André, sempre soube o que queria. Futebol na rua, época no campo de baixo. Você sabe, meu de gentil, olha os culachos. Eu andava pelas ruas vestindo meu bate-bola. Se eu passasse em minha frente, era melhor tu sair fora. Carnaval de rua, perigoso e divertido.
Don't you just want to spank her?
We know no one who's English listens to this show after last week, so we can get away with commentary like that.
Absolutely.
Who's
That's what the one Australian Bond said. What did he like about being Bond? He said, "It was the bread and the birds, man."
The bread and the birds.
Of course, he said it with a bit of an Aussie accent, not an English, not a Brit accent. So I kind of screwed that up a little bit. But
right,
mate. What are we going to talk about now, eh?
Let's start in CONCACAF. You know, most of us live in, all of us live in the CONCACAF region here. And of course, on the 3rd, which is what, Wednesday?
Yep.
U.S., Costa Rica, and Cardiff has already declared that the Saprissa Stadium is the most hostile arena or stadium in the CONCACAF region, and I think most of us agree with them there on that. So, Cardiff, let me ask you real quick. USA, Costa Rica, what should we expect from this game? What would be the result that the U.S. Would be happy with coming out of Costa Rica?
Getting a draw somehow. The U.S. is going to set up, I think, very defensively. Saprissa is just a dungeon. That's the term I use to describe it. It's and the U.S., by the way, I'm not sure if everyone's aware of the FIFA rule. Saprissa Stadium has turf. So the U.S. left Miami this morning. We're taping on Monday, and it has gone through a practice and a walkthrough at Saprissa already because of the turf. So they'll have a little more time, built-in time, to acclimate themselves in Costa Rica, which is actually a good thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Costa Rica, they're sitting right now. They are sitting in second place, 6 points, and they are, you know, once beaten. But they seem to, you know, that home field advantage, they're perfect at home right now. If they can get past, if they get a draw, are they going to be disappointed with the draw?
Yeah, I think that opens the door. Honduras is on 4 points, but they've actually, Honduras has taken a point on the road at Trinidad. I think Honduras is looking for somehow to get that automatic third spot, maybe even the second spot, because that's a country that's been let down so many times in World Cup qualifying. You look, and I know we've talked about this on the show, or at least I've talked about it for years now. Honduras has got too much talent to be consistently missing the World Cup, especially from a region that, in CONCACAF, that's not that deep. So they're the ones who are probably going to be most encouraged by a draw, because then Costa Rica is dropping 2 points at home. And Honduras certainly has the squad, particularly when they get Suazo back from injury later in the summer, that can win, that can take points on the road.
Yeah, most definitely. Was there, when the U.S. roster came out, was there anybody that you thought should have been on there, shouldn't have been on there? Were there any surprises, anybody that caught your eye when that U.S. roster came out?
I guess the obvious one is Kenny Cooper, that everybody has been talking about now for about 2 years, as Bob Bradley has just continued to exclude him for whatever reason. He's 6'3", he can play as a target forward, he can drift out wide, he's got better, and if the U.S. had players with better technical skill, it wouldn't be an issue. But you notice most attacking players who are Americans, I mean, I hate to say this, we say this with all love, we're all Americans, well, everyone but Kevin's and lives in the U.S. Most American attacking players have first touches like their feet are made of stone. I mean, they're just horrible. But Cooper's really a technically sound player. Can play in the air, can play with the ball at his feet. So I guess at this point we have to just believe Bradley omitting Cooper, who did come through Manchester United's system, keep in mind, is more out of a personality conflict of some sort than any other reason. And that would really be the only one that shocked me. I guess the big story, and I was telling Juan this before we started taping, is that the Americans have this team concept, and I spent some time with them in training this week, and they made Jose Francisco Torres, who plays in the Clausura final in Estadio Hidalgo Sunday night, fly to Miami to join the team so that he could fly to San Jose with the team instead of just taking him from
Pachuca.
Yeah, to San Jose. So he's flying in like 3 hours out of his way just so he can travel with the team, which is very American.
Yeah, you mentioned Mexico, and I think we were all kind of stunned, you know, that Javier Aguirre, his first, you know, major competition here, or at least first game, big game, and as the in his new tenure with the El Tri, and he calls up Cuauhtémoc Blanco, and I mean, a lot of people were surprised by that. I don't know, do you see that as a deserved call-up, or is he just reaching and Mexico's maybe a little desperate at this point? How do you take that move of Kwal getting called up?
Desperate.
Yeah.
There's no other way to determine it. Now, Blanco has this thing with the officials in CONCACAF where he's able to goad them into calls, particularly at Azteca. Honduras has been on the bad end of this several times in the last 10 years, in the last decade. So they will know it, and they will have to travel to Azteca later in the summer. So they'll, I'm sure they're aware of it. And he and Guevara have a bit of a rivalry. Guevara and Blanco have a bit of a rivalry in MLS. And I'm of the belief Guevara is the better player at the international level and at the MLS level. But man, I don't know. Javier Aguirre, he wasn't very successful at Atletico this season. We talked about Atletico earlier in the show. They recover once he sacked, and then now he's reaching again. I am a little bit shocked by some of his player selection, particularly Blanco, and we'll see what happens. I mean, I guess that's again. All these Mexican managers, because of the state of their federation, feel like they're living on borrowed time. And they have to, even though Aguirre has been maybe the most successful Mexican manager outside of Mexico, he's, again, very, very sweaty, seeing what happened to Hugo Sanchez and Eriksen, and what happened to La Volpe. And I come back to this point when I talk to my Mexican friends. I think if the FMF had been and the media had been a little more charitable towards La Volpe, they never would have been in this position that they're in right now. But they've now gone down this road where they're on the slippery slope, and at least from the American perspective, it's a good thing that they haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah. Yes, most definitely. I mean, Mexico in the next couple of who do they have? They have Trinidad and they have El Salvador.
Yeah.
They have to go to El Salvador, and then they'll have Trinidad at home. I mean, for Javier Aguirre, 4 points, good, bad. What is that going to be? I mean, 4 points will keep them in you know, strict contention. But, you know, with the way the FMF is, maybe that's, you know, you never know what they're going to think.
That's not going to be good enough for them.
Yeah. Do you think if 4 points is good enough? Or what? Because, I mean, they're going to get the 3 points against Trinidad.
Yeah.
Against Tecna. But El Salvador has shown that they can, especially, they can come back. They've shown a lot of heart and determination when they're down. So, do you think 4 points is enough?
Maybe. It is if they hold serve at Azteca. The question for the rest of you guys is, will Mexico be able to take 3 points off Honduras and the United States at Azteca? The way they played thus far, they probably won't. But does the coaching change and bringing Javi Aguirre back make that difference?
Good question. What do you guys think?
Big difference is going to be if they're going to be able to get 3 points in El Salvador. They haven't done so in over 20 plus years. And with Carlos Villas-Boas there, you know, he's one of those Mexican coaches that somehow slipped through the cracks, got outside. He's never really mentioned in the same light as an Aguirre. And he could be successful building this El Salvador team. It's a rough, humble group, a team that's really, you know, talented, may not be the most talented team, as a group of the past teams. They're able to go out and fight the good fight on the pitch. The question is, will Mexico get the 3 points on the road where they need it? They need that to El Salvador. And you know what, Cardi? I wasn't so shocked with the Blanco call-up. I was shocked, though, with Oscar Perez call-up.
Yeah, that was another one. That was an absolute...
That was one. I mean, he would have had this 5 years ago. And have him called up, and instead of an Osvaldo Sanchez, have him called up alongside of Guillermo Ochoa, who's mind-boggling. Like, you know, why don't you just bring Jared Borghetti while you're at it, too?
Well, he may be next. No, I was going to mention that earlier. Yeah, Jared Borghetti and Perez may have to play because Galachoa has not – he hasn't been very good for America, if you watch him in the Clausura. And for Mexico, he's some games he's good, some games he's bad. I know he's on the cover of video games and in all these commercials, Home Depot commercial and everything. He's and he happened to play for the right club because he played for America. He got elevated to this superstar status. But the Mexican goalkeeping situation is a mess. I mean, Osvaldo Sanchez hasn't played well. I can see why he's been dropped. But they have a lot of problems, and Villar now appears to have gotten away from them. It looks like a Maradona. We'll talk about this with Comdeball, I guess, later in the show. But looks like Villar, who would have been naturalized within the next year for Mexico, and I thought maybe their goalkeeper in the World Cup from Atlante, is not going to be eligible to play for Mexico.
Okay, but I think he's peaked already. Is it safe to say he peaked already?
I'm not sure he ever peaked. That's my opinion. I mean, I don't think much of him. I mean, the Mexican goalkeepers have been. I think Perez was okay at one point, but they've generally been a very shaky, kind of flamboyant. Mexico has. Their back line has been very bad lately. I mean, Rafa Marquez, the same. He never replicates his form for Barca with Mexico, with El Tri for the last, I'd say, 5 years. And Johnny Magallon is their other center back. He plays for Guadalajara, for Chivas, and he's a guy that gets caught too far upfield a lot. Salcedo has been a disappointment lately. Pardo is still solid, but I mean, they're defensively, they're a mess, so their goalkeeper almost has to be superhuman, and they don't have that kind of keeper in their pool. Mexico has so many problems. I mean, I just don't know. I think changing coaches constantly has exacerbated it, but their problems are with their youth system and their federation. I mean, whoever the coach is just inherits a mess every single time.
It's a very messy situation there. Is it, maybe they're unfortunate to be on it now because they still qualify with all those problems. Now, the question is, and we probably said this before in previous podcasts, but is it going to be, are we going to finish in the top three, are we going to be fourth, and then have to play maybe a Uruguay or Ecuador for that half spot there? And who knows what's going to happen with Mexico? Is stronger. Costa Rica turned out of the U.S. probably going to finish top. I mean, there's a lot mess that Aguirre has to clean up, and he's got matches to do it. I don't know. I think Mexico's fine, but I don't. Just touch up a little bit on Honduras and El Salvador, play each other. a kind of Central America rivalry. How he that no Honduras, he figured they're gonna lose or they're not gonna get, they're gonna get the draw in the United States. But when they go to, but when they're at home, everybody knows my guy, El Salvador is gonna be tough. Is this that? Is that Honduras, El Salvador, is kind of their swing game?
Yeah, I think Honduras is going to have to take some points on the road in games like that to make sure they make it, to buffer themselves, because they've been so close so many times, and they have absolutely too much talent. I mean, the best players, the very top players in the CONCACAF region generally are three of like the top five players are Honduran. So there's no real excuse anymore for, I should say three of the top five field players. Obviously the American goalkeepers are cut above everyone else, but there's just really no more excuses for Honduras. And they did what they had to do in that semifinal round in the group of death, knocking Canada off, taking 6 points off of them, taking care of Jamaica, and obviously beating Mexico in the final match. So they're going to need to get something from that game against El Salvador just to stay on track.
Most okay. What is there a result out there or a match out there that posed the surprise that then after the result is in World Cup, did you actually just see that had potential?
Which match is that?
I was just saying, is there any match out there that you see that maybe has a surprise when you see the result?
Yeah, I mean, I guess any match involving Mexico now has upset potential because they can't get points on the road. They're, let's see, I mean, on the road in qualifying, they got smoked down in Honduras. They got beaten badly in Jamaica, and they were very fortunate in Edmonton against Canada to get a draw when Canada hit the post twice in the last couple minutes, and they escaped with a draw. And also some generous calls in that. And then they got beat in Columbus like they always do against the U.S., and they got beat in Honduras again badly. So upset potential of any match involving Mexico on the road. They don't travel well. I mean, I'm curious to get your take, Juan, on why does Mexico not travel well with having so many players that play in big club matches? Is it because the national team and the federation is just so fucked up, for lack of a better term, right now that they can't do anything when they leave Mexico, when they leave Azteca?
Well, the federation is going to do all the things down the road. As a player, you have to know that when you're going into a hostile situation, you know, that you're up against. The problem is that, in a way, they're not accustomed to being in a hostile situation. And this team, going back, I mean, when these qualifiers got out, I said, you know what? The U.S. is doing the right thing by going to Spain, by going to Canada, by going to France, by playing Argentina, by going to safe areas where they know they're not going to be the same team, positioning themselves mentally to play in Mexico, to play Costa Rica at the Mexico. Mexico goes wherever the money is, and every time they have those exhibition or friendly match, they have 50, 60, 80, 90,000
for them.
So they don't
care where
they really go. They're
home team. But let me ask you, Juan.
They don't condition themselves in the
Well, this is a big subject. When I talk to a lot of Mexican American fans of the Mexican national team, they don't play any home games other than in qualifiers. I mean, any games in Mexico other than their qualifiers. They're playing all their friendlies in the United States, and they're playing usually second tier opposition, or they'll play, you know, they'll play Chile's B team, they'll play Peru's B team. You know, the time when the Argentina sent their A team, they got killed. But they are not used to playing even at home anymore. The Mexican fans are losing their connection a little bit with the national team because they're playing all their games outside of Mexico, and they're not playing any, they're not doing, as you said, what the United States did. The United States went to Spain, the United States went to England, the U.S. is, went to South Africa, went to Switzerland, they played all these tough games in the last couple of years. And Mexico, I don't know that Mexico's left North America at all in the last 3 years.
I don't think Mexico's gone west, east of the Mississippi.
That's true.
That matter, it's true. Yeah, I think. Well, I think. Yeah, they only did once when they've gone to New York or Boston. That once in a blue moon. I mean, they play home games. I mean, let's be honest. Playing in Houston, in LA, in Phoenix, they're home games. Whether geography, says otherwise. I mean, those are home games. When you have 50,000 screaming Mexican fans. At that stadium, it's a home game. They're going because of the money. They're going because of the promoters. I guess, in retrospect, in a way, it has to do with the federation as well. They could set up games against European sides. They could set up against the teams from South America. You know, play a Brazil in Europe. For example, but they never go to Europe. They never go to Asia. They never go to South America, with the exception of, when they were going as club teams or Copa America or something like that. They don't go, and they don't condition themselves. Now you're starting to see them with that later.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, most definitely. But Mexico, they got it. I start playing some friendlies in hostile environments in order to be able to have that reserve of, there's that mental toughness that they can get, so that when they really in a hostile environment in a game that counts, it's not strange to them. That hostility that they're going to receive is not strange to them. They can come together and then, move on and get 3 points and then reestablish the power that they've had and over the CONCACAF for, who knows, 50 years or however long it's been. Go ahead.
No, and mind you, I've spoken to some Mexican fans up in this area, and they have completely tuned off the national team. They have completely tuned off the national team. They've completely tuned off their, the league itself. I mean, there is a real big identity crisis going on, not just at the national team level, but at the club level as well. I mean, as much as the networks are going to deny, and they don't give you ratings per se, there is a huge identity crisis going on with Mexican soccer right now. Because the average Joe, I'm not talking about, the media or the papers or what have you, as far as the coverage is concerned, the average Joe no longer seems identified with their team. America for obvious reasons, the Guadalajara for other reasons. They no longer have that attachment that they did now. I mean, one of the reasons is also having the access to go and see a Barcelona on television every weekend, to see a Manchester United. Some even have access to go and see MLS. I mean, right now is a huge crisis, and as well as seeing how the foreign players have taken over in such a big way in Mexico, that's also limiting the growth of the Mexican youth, or the Mexican youth side, in any big competition as well.
Yeah, I mean, I saw their U-20s play the U.S. in a game in Texas last year, which was embarrassing. I mean, the U.S. beat them like 4-0 or 5-0, and it was in Laredo, so it was essentially kind of a home game for Mexico in a way. But the difference between America, and this is the United States we're talking about, not Brazil, not Argentina, not Spain, not Italy, not Germany. This is the United States at the U-20 level looks so much better than Mexico. So there's something wrong with their development system, and the whole thing is rotting now. And I think Mexico, unless they solve this situation in the next few years, could be in a state of permanent decline. Because don't kid yourself, these Central American countries are getting more serious about their football, structurally, organizationally, and Costa Rica has done a very good job for a couple cycles now. But Honduras is getting more serious. I think Guatemala is getting more serious. And they can challenge Mexico, and those Central American countries would love nothing better than to put one over on Mexico.
Oh yeah, you gotta remember, definitely. And remember too, the over the last maybe 5 to 10 years, the political stability of that region has improved.
Absolutely.
Improved. Guatemala had a terrible civil war. Salvador, that whole region for a long time was very unstable politically. And now that things have stabilized politically in those areas, the soccer programs are going to improve as well.
So, yeah, arguably they had caught Mexico in the early 80s. Honduras and El Salvador, in reality, had caught Mexico, and then the political instability in both countries just destroyed that for 10 or 15 years.
Absolutely.
And also, you got to consider the political instability in Mexico right now.
Yeah.
That's also been huge as well. I mean, but listen, let's not say it's all going on in Mexico. I mean, there's teams like Atlas, for example, who is holding tryouts in the next couple of days in the Arkansas area, trying to find, Mexican youth to try and take down back to Guadalajara to develop them. I mean, there's teams that are being smart about it. I mean, Pachuca is pretty much the preeminent model of a club down there. I mean, there's a few clubs there that are doing.
Yeah, let me get a cheap plug in here for MLS Talk. We're going to be talking in a show in the next couple of weeks to a guy from the Orlando Supporters Club, the president of the Orlando Supporters Club, Soccer Supporters Club. They're talking to Adam head of the curve. If Pachuca was actually the model that was emulated by the rest of the Mexican, by the Federation, they may be okay.
Too bad that ironically they have the president of the former president of Necaxa as their
And of course, Necaxa has been run into the ground by this guy, and he's run the Federation into the ground. So there's your parallel. Necaxa will be playing up in the second division next season when it begins.
And the season after that.
And what town does Necaxa play in now? I mean, we know they left Mexico City.
They play in Aguascalientes.
Oh, that's right. I knew that. I was just shocked.
They have incredible facilities that they built. But the problem is, guys like Compeon, like Raul Arias, at the height of his powers, if you would like to say, brought in, whatever was left of the America scrap heap. I mean, you had guys like Insua, like Herman Villa coming in. I mean, guys that were really in the America doghouse brought into Necaxa. Which was, you got to be honest, Necaxa was never a team that had a big following. In the mid-90s, they won titles, like crazy with Aguinaga and Santa Fe, with even Luis Hernandez, who won titles. And he was brought to greatness only to kind of like fall back to the earth when he went back to when they went to Boca Juniors and was demanding for a starting spot over Martín Palermo, Penicia, and this guy Maradona, if you guys don't know him.
He wasn't too shabby either. Neither was Palermo.
Yeah, he was alright.
They were okay.
Now, you may remember this from the early days of MLS. Every single year we had supposedly a substantial rumor that Caniggia and Batistuta were going to sign in MLS, and obviously neither ever came.
Oh, man, yeah, exactly. It's too bad. They would have ripped it in half.
But Caniggia was earning a lot more money in Argentina at that time than he would have ever earned in the MLS. I mean, remember back in Argentina, the dollar and the Argentine peso were the same thing. So, I mean, he was earning $1 million or $2 million or something like that with Boca Juniors, and I don't know where they got the money from. So. But that's another time for another show.
Yeah, we'll save that speculation for later there. Now that we're talking about Argentina, let's move over to the CONMEBOL qualifiers. And Paraguay, first place, 24 points. They look like their qualification is sealed. But then after that, I mean, you have five teams, even six teams if you want to include Ecuador, that are still in the mix and still have a good shot of qualifying. Let me ask you guys this. What team needs the 6 points in the next coming rounds in order to ensure that they'll be going to South Africa 2010? Who do you think needs the 6 points? Because 4 points, they still can hold on, but I think 6 points is the max. Who needs the 6 points more than any other team? What team do you think needs the 6 points?
They all do?
But maybe one team is like a
Colombia needs it. I mean, Uruguay needs it. Right now, a team that's really struggling, and from the last week, is Chile.
Was that 4-0, Juan? Was that game?
Yeah.
4-0?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Awful.
And then they drew with Belgium, 1-1.
Oh.
I mean, so right now Chile is kind of, they're taking a back, and they're kind of like, stunned a little bit. They're trying to get their grips back. But, Venezuela needs it. Uruguay, if they want to be in a position to certainly, be in a good position.
Ecuador,
everybody needs it. It's not just one team that needs it more than the other. I mean, obviously, if you're below Uruguay, you need it much more than anybody above Uruguay. But if you're looking to really cement your place in South Africa, everybody needs it.
Paraguay is the only, they don't need it. They only need another, they need two.
Yeah, points. Right now, but they're decimated as far as injuries are concerned.
Yeah,
four really important players that are going to be out. I mean, Cabanas is going to be out. Morel Rodriguez is going to be out. I know there's El Cáceres, I think, might be out as well. I mean, guys that are very important to that Paraguayan lineup that are going to be out. I mean, and their run is not going to be very easy. I mean, they got to play Brazil and they got to play Uruguay. They got to play.
They play Chile and Brazil in the next coming.
And Chile.
They got to play in Brazil and Chile at home.
Yeah.
I mean, neither match is going to be easy, but I mean, right now the way the math works, 2-3 points, they're cemented in South Africa.
What about you, Mike? What do you expect in these next couple of matches here, in the South American qualifying? What's got your eye?
Well, I'd like to see how Argentina is going to react to the 6-1 spanking that they got a couple months ago at Bolivia. They also are in urge of or in need of points as well, because they're only 2 points above the playoff spot now. I know there's still some games left, but I don't think Argentina wants to be in an uncomfortable situation headed to the last portion of the qualifiers. Paraguay's got a couple of tough games coming up, and like Juan said, they have an injury problem, so I think that they're up against the wall as well. And it's just everything's too tight. I mean from Bolivia, who's in ninth, to the last direct qualifying spot, there's a difference of 7 points, which is not a lot. Now, I know, you figure Bolivia doesn't really have a chance, but thematically, everything's still pretty compact. There's really not, a big gap between the teams that are going to South Africa and the teams that are eliminated. It's really, everything's within striking distance for everyone.
I mean, the thing that's going to happen, the toughest in this group of World Cup qualifiers is going to be, without a doubt, Brazil. I mean, they got to host Paraguay, and then after that, they have to head down to Montevideo and play Uruguay, and then they have to come back and play Paraguay. I mean, it is going to be hellish.
And what a message is Dunga sending by taking that full squad with him after those two qualifiers to the Confederations Cup? I mean, he's not giving these guys any time off.
Well, I mean, that's his scheduling. I mean, he can't do anything and reschedule and stuff, because then everybody's going to start.
No, but I'm saying, do you think maybe he would have been wiser to cycle some different players in for the Confederations Cup? Just to give those guys some time off for the next set of qualifiers. Well, I guess they have July off anyway, right? I mean, the next set of qualifiers would be in August.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, I guess the team is deep enough as it is. I mean, when you have a team when Danny Alves is not even the starter,
yeah,
then you know that the depth is not even an issue. So I guess they're going to be rotating a lot. I mean, yeah, you're going to finish Paraguay. You're going to probably be a couple of days in Brazil and fly to South Africa and get ready to play. They did not get a very easy group, that's for sure. I mean, playing against Italy, playing against Egypt, and playing against the U.S. is not going to be a walk in the park for the Brazilians, that's for sure. But they for sure should be in the second round, without a doubt. But he's going to go out for everything, that's for sure.
Well, I think also you got to remember the way Dunga has been, his style of play and the way he's been setting up his team. It's not the, you know, we're not talking about the Jogo Bonito here. You know, this is, it's a defensive style. And defensive style is an energy-saving style. So, while it's going to be a 90 minutes of, you know, physical, you know, of stress on your body, obviously. But it's not going to be overly taxing. You know what I'm saying? It's not going to be a situation where, because they're going to be all out attack running a lot, that, you know, they'll be more tired than maybe another team who plays a different philosophy. And then, you know, looking at especially their forwards, you know, I'm looking at their who they called up, they're all young guys. I think Luis Fabiano, from what I see on the forwards, is the oldest one. And he's, what, 25, 26, something like that? So maybe he can pick some young guys, and those young legs, they can handle, you know, three or four matches in a week or two. So I think Dunga's style of a more defensive style is, you know, definitely a energy conserving style. And then you have young guys, especially up top with, you know, Patoto and Fabiano and Nilmar and Robinho, that they'll be able to get away with it and still, you know, be very effective and you know, get points and, you know, beat Brazil.
But let me ask, one of the criticisms of Dunga, I mean, the most obvious criticism has been they're not playing Jogo Bonito, they're not playing this beautiful football. But another criticism has been that he's almost ignored the domestic league. You know, guys who played really well in Brazil are getting passed over for guys who are playing at some big European clubs. What do you guys think of that? Because obviously the Brazilian team has always had a healthy mixture of players from everywhere, and now it seems like Dunga's converged on a couple key leagues, plus obviously Russia and the Ukraine, also with a lot of players he's picking from those leagues as well.
Well, I think this lineup that he called up has the most domestic players. So maybe he's sensing something here. Maybe he's seeing the Brasileirão over the last couple of months has really gotten stronger with, you know, certain teams making moves, some players from Europe coming back. You know, we think of Ronaldo, Adriano, Edmilson is one guy, Fred, from who was at Lyon. So, you know, he's starting to see. Maybe he's buckling under pressure. You never know. Brazilian Football Confederation, you never know how it works politically in that hierarchy. But
and the state confederations too, I guess, have been complaining about this. They've been upset at Dunga for this reason. Now, I mean, the thing is, he took a very kind of patchwork team to the Copa and spanked Argentina. So he has a tactical setup that's working, and I think everybody kind of acknowledges that, but they acknowledge it begrudgingly because it's not Brazilian football, and he's not picking the guys they want to see pick.
Right, but ultimately, what it comes down to is, do they lift the cup at the end? Okay, they don't party less hard in Rio if they win the cup on a defensive style. Okay, the people in Rio, if they win the cup, they're not going to be saying, "Oh, we can't party in Samba as much as we want to because we didn't see the Jogo Bonito." No, they lift the cup, they'll be partying just as hard and celebrating just as much. So
I know
in modern day, you know, the results are ultimately what counts.
Yeah, I know everybody is talking Spain. I have gone on the record and already said this, so I might as well just say it again, and I'm putting myself out there. I will be very surprised if Brazil does not win the World Cup in 2010. Because I think Dunga has the right tactical setup, and they still have the skill level where if they need to play the way that Brazil has traditionally played, they can play. I just think that they're
he's got a roadmap in his mind. When they get to South Africa in 2010, they're going to be so tough to beat.
My only concern with Brazil is who's going to step up, and are they going to rely too much on Kaká for packing? That's my only concern. I think defensively they'll be fine, but who's going to is Kaká? Are they going to rely too much on Kaká to be the creator? Who's going to be that finisher that they really need?
Alano can be a very creative player too within Dunga's system. He hasn't shown it on the club level because he's been in the wrong places. And you know, he plays for my club actually, so I can admit that's the wrong place for him. But he on a narrow pitch in England and in the rain. But he can be a creative player. And you've got Diego, a year at Juve is going to revitalize his confidence to where he can play that supporting role also in the midfield. I just really like where Brazil is in spite of their having some difficulties in qualifying. I just kind of see this thing coming together and see what Dunga, who is a World Cup winner himself, what he's seeing for this Brazilian team.
Right,
and
you know,
Brazil has learned to win World Cups. Despite adversity, 2002 was probably the prime example. Nobody gave them a chance. I mean, everybody going into 2002 was talking about how Argentina was going to win it, how if it wasn't Argentina, it was going to be France. And out of nowhere, you know, Brazil was Brazil, and they were steady, and they played their game the best out of everybody at the right time.
The two big countries that were written off going into 2002 were Brazil and Germany. Well, guess who played in the final?
Exactly. Let me just ask you guys real quickly. You know, we talk about Brazil, we got to talk about Argentina. You know, the yin and the yang. And Argentina, Diego Maradona made his selections. You know, Higuain got left off again. Good news, good, bad. What's your take on Higuain getting left off, and do you see that as something that could hurt the team? Ask Mike. What's your opinion on that? On Higuain being left off.
Despite the depth that they have with their forwards, it's still quite a surprise. I mean, it's Madrid's top scorer. How is he not on the national team? But at the same time, though, they're deep with the strikers. They have the short guys with Tevez, Messi, and Agüero, and he also has Lisandro López, Oporto, Milito, and Gonzalo Vergesio, who was actually a surprise. I guess from his performance in that exhibition match against Panama, got him that spot. But you know, you figure Higuain would probably have the edge over Vergesio, right? I mean, you have one guy who's succeeding in one of the biggest clubs in the world and another striker who's doing really well domestically for San Lorenzo, but I mean, when it comes to winning it out. But, you know, my main thing is how they're going to bounce back against Bolivia. Now, you mentioned if Higuain's absence is going to hurt him. I don't think it's going to hurt him. It could definitely help him, though.
I don't know. I mean, right now, Argentina's in a situation where they have to be in a position where the media is putting an intense amount of pressure on them. I mean, as whether or not they admit it, the media expects them to just go in and just beat the living snot out of Colombia. Because they're motivated, because Maradona is expecting it, because the Argentine people are expecting it, and because Colombia is not doing very well.
Yeah, but that usually never. See, that's the thing, though. Like every time, they always expect. They put a lot of pressure on the national team to get these big results, and it never happens. And the same thing happened with Bolivia. Argentina was supposed to go to La Paz and just like regulate. And they came back with a severe ass whooping. And you know, another example, 2002. They were supposed to win everything in 2002, and they went home in the first round. It's always like that over there. And I think, you know, obviously having Maradona as the head coach is automatically going to put all kinds of pressure on the team. But I think they just kind of need to come down from cloud nine and realize that, you know, they need to get their act together before they're in trouble heading into the last couple rounds of the qualifiers. And I don't think they're going to get into trouble, but I mean, it, you know, they're not in yet, you know. The other thing that I'm kind of wondering is, you know, even if they do make the World Cup, you know, they're only about a year away from South Africa, and Maradona's still trying out players. So you kind of figure, you know, is time starting to be an issue as far as getting 20 guys that are going to regularly play for you in the upcoming year and most likely be on the roster for the World Cup. You know, he's still trying out players, and I don't know if with a year left, you know, there's still time for that.
Well, what's everyone's thought on that as a general concept? Because my frustration, part of my frustration, and I've written about this extensively with the United States, is that Bob Bradley seems to know who his 23 guys for South Africa is, and if someone doesn't get hurt, we can all pick the 23 too. He doesn't, even though the U.S. has a fairly deep pool, he's just written off some guys a year out because he wants the team to gel together. But at the same time, I mean, I see what Maradona is doing. He knows Argentina needs to get to a higher level, and they're under a lot of pressure, especially after some of the recent results. And he, I think, is personally, from my perspective, is doing the right thing, calling in a number of new players. And I mean, what does everyone think about that as like a general rule a year out from a World Cup? Do you like the U.S. model or do you like the Argentine model?
I think the Argentine model thing is with Argentina, it's kind of like what makes them great also hurts them, because they have so much talent that it's hard to pick top players that mesh together well, because you got so many guys who can do so many things well, you know. So kind of like it's almost like their blessing and their curse. It's the same thing with Brazil. And Mike, you know this, they're three deep in pretty much every position, right? So it's hard. Yeah. You have that much talent. It's hard to put it together. And it's hard to measure it on the field. I mean, you know, they might win 0 or something, but still kind of, you know, look at it, doesn't gel right. So I think it's kind of their curse and their blessing. So much talent, their blessing, but at the same time, it's a curse because, so you know, who do you pick? How do you get them to come together?
But the thing is you can have exactly, you can have all the talent that you want, but there's also, when it comes to making a team or putting a team together, you have to figure out, you know, chemistry, what players work well or complement each other on and off the field, and not just when it comes to game time. You know, a lot of things go into that, and that makes, you know, that makes it harder despite being so deep at every position with very talented players. And that's
also the thing.
I don't know if it's a concern. I don't know if it's a concern, but I mean, it's, you know, it's sort of in the back of my mind. You know, you have, you know, a team like Argentina that a year away, you know, is still trying out players. And, you know, I would kind of lean more towards the Bradley deal, where you know, a year before the World Cup, he already knows at least what the backbone of that team is going to be going into South Africa.
Yeah, and a lot of it is based on who gets along with who, which is another, you know, that's an important factor, and I know. American coaches stress that, and in fact, I've been told that off the record by a couple of people when I've said, "Well, why haven't you picked this guy? You know, why do you not pick?" And Cooper being one of them, a guy I mentioned earlier, it's like, well, you know, this guy gets along better with everyone else, and they're real sweaty about that.
Well, Mike, when are you going to be really stressing? Is it going to be he hasn't decided by the end of the summer, and it's just totally off the scale for you as an Argentina fan, or? Or
no,
perhaps.
No. I think I'm gonna. No. I think if by the end of the qualifiers, he's still trying players, and then I'll be all right, you know. Because once qualifiers are done, they really have no other official competition other than you know, a few exhibitions, what, once every month, maybe 2 months. So
let's let the listeners in here.
Yeah, I think that I would start. You know, getting a little nervous about it once the qualifiers are over and he's still trying to figure out who's going to be on the roster.
I think it's just like George said, that he's got his hand in the cookie jar and he's not ready to pull it out yet, because there's just so many options available. And for me,
right now, if you look at it, there's really not even he doesn't even know who the starting goalkeeper is right now.
Yeah.
You have a defense that's not hasn't been at least performance wise hasn't been stable in the last couple of matches. and from the midfield you have a lot of talent, but you know, will it be consistent enough, constantly on a regular basis, or just producing? You know, has it been like that?
Yeah, and you're going to be missing another defender as well. With Angeletti's going to be out almost 4 months. I mean,
yeah, he blew out his knee.
Exactly, he tore up his knee. Central pairing with Heinze and Casadilla, is that something that really inspires a lot of confidence? And maybe
not
having exactly. I mean, does Carrizo offer a lot of confidence? The guy, although he might be a veteran, he is very experienced at the international level, like Villar. Is he going to inspire a lot of confidence? And, you have players that are talented, but at the international level are lacking experience. And the good thing that Maradona is doing is trying to keep a little bit of motivation to the competition in that. But it's
who's
hard, you know.
No, I was just gonna say, you know, after all is said and done, who's gonna actually anchor that defense? Are we gonna see Samuel in there for sure? I mean, a couple of the older players. Would there be a fear that possibly Maradona, after all is said and done, he's gonna pick an older squad?
That is a good question. You have to see in these last rounds of the qualifiers, what the defense is going to be like. I don't know. I really hope it's not, you know, Heinze and Catalia going into South Africa, because then we're in some shit.
Or Colaccini.
I don't think it's good.
I get them real hot, my song seduce them. I flow, I'm so mysterious. Nas and Nasty's the alias. Everything platinum, I glow. Cadillac trucks pulling up to the dough. On top, out the car, lounge at the bar. We spin a thou, we wild, look how rowdy we are. I feel like $1 million. Feel me holler to the max with the Benz and chrome wheel and polish. Thugs and renters to the players and ballers. Sexy mamas, fly ladies looking proper. Look good enough to be taking shopping. Earrings, bracelets, now you rocking. Your body's so nice that I give you this option.